A Lord Kelvin and a Mrs. Eddy, and something not to their liking, it does not exist. Of course not, we intermediates say, but, also, that, in intermediateness, neither is there absolute non-existence. Or a Christian Scientist and a toothache neither exists in the final sense, also neither is absolutely non-existent, and, according to our therapeutics, the one that more highly approximates to realness will win. A secret of power. I think it's another profundity. Do you want power over something? Be more nearly real than it. We'll begin with yellow substances that have fallen upon this earth, we'll see whether our data of them have a higher approximation to realness than have the dogmas of those who deny their existence, that is, as products from somewhere external to this earth. In mere impressionism we take our stand. We have no positive tests nor standards. Realism in art, realism in science, they pass away. In 1859, the thing to do was to accept Darwinism. Now many biologists are revolting and trying to conceive of something else. The thing to do was to accept it in its day, but Darwinism of course was never proved. The fittest survive. What is meant by the fittest? Not the strongest, not the cleverest. Weakness and stupidity everywhere survive. There is no way of determining fitness except in that a thing does survive. Fitness, then, is only another name for survival. Darwinism. That survivors survive. Although Darwinism, then, seems positively baseless, or absolutely irrational, its massing of supposed data, and its attempted coherence approximate more highly to organization and consistency than did the inchoate speculations that preceded it. Or that Columbus never proved that the earth is round. Shadow of the earth on the moon? No one has ever seen it in its entirety. The earth's shadow is much larger than the moon. If the periphery of the shadow is curved but the convex moon, a straight-edged object will cast a curved shadow upon a surface that is convex. All the other so-called proofs may be taken up in the same way. It was impossible for Columbus to prove that the earth is round. It was not required, only that with a higher seeming of positiveness than that of his opponents, he should attempt. The thing to do, in 1492, was nevertheless to accept that beyond Europe, to the west, were other lands. I offer for acceptance, as something concordant with the spirit of this first quarter of the 20th century, the expression that beyond this earth are other lands from which come things, as, from America, flow things to Europe. As to yellow substances that have fallen upon this earth, the endeavor to exclude extramundane origins is the dogma that all yellow rains and yellow snows are colored with pollen from this earth's pine trees. Simon's Meteorological Magazine is especially prudish in this respect and regards as highly improper all advances made by other explainers. Nevertheless, the Monthly Weather Review, May, 1877, reports a golden yellow fall, of February 27, 1877, at Peckloh, Germany, in which four kinds of organisms, not pollen, were the coloring matter. There were minute things shaped like arrows, coffee beans, horns, and discs. They may have been symbols. They may have been objective hieroglyphics. Mere passing fancy, let it go. In the Annals de Chimie, 85-288, there is a list of rains said to have contained sulfur. I have 30 or 40 other notes. I'll not use one of them. I too admit that every one of them is upon a fall of pollen. I said, to begin with, that our methods would be the methods of theologians and scientists, and they always begin with an appearance of liberality. I grant 30 or 40 points to start with. I'm as liberal as any of them, or that my liberality won't cost me anything the enormousness of the data that we shall have. Or just to look over a typical instance of this dogma, and the way it works out. In the American Journal of Science, 1-42-196, we are told of a yellow substance that fell by the bucketful upon a vessel, one windless night in June, in Pictou Harbor, Nova Scotia. The writer analyzed the substance, and it was found to give off nitrogen and ammonia and an animal odor. Now, one of our intermediatist principles, to start with, is that so far from positive, in the aspect of homogeneousness, are all substances, that, at least in what is called an elementary sense, anything can be found anywhere. Mahogany logs on the coast of Greenland, bugs of a valley on the top of Mt. Blanc, atheists at a prayer meeting, ice in India. For instance, chemical analysis can reveal that almost any dead man was poisoned with arsenic, we'll say, because there is no stomach without some iron, lead, tin, gold, arsenic in it and of it which, of course, in a broader sense, doesn't matter much, because a certain number of persons must, as a restraining influence, be executed for murder every year, and, if detectives aren't able really to detect anything, illusion of their success is all that is necessary, and it is very honorable to give up one's life for society as a whole. The chemist who analyzed the substance of Pictou sent a sample to the editor of the journal. The editor of course found pollen in it. My own acceptance is that there'd have to be some pollen in it, that nothing could very well fall through the air, in June, near the pine forests of Nova Scotia, and escape all floating spores of pollen. But the editor does not say that the substance contained pollen. He disregards nitrogen, ammonia, and an animal odor, and says that the substance was pollen. For the sake of our 30 or 40 tokens of liberality, or pseudo-liberality, if we can't be really liberal, we grant that the chemist of the first examination probably wouldn't know an animal odor if he were janitor of a menagerie. As we go along, however, there can be no such sweeping ignoring of this phenomenon. The fall of animal matter from the sky. I'd suggest, to start with, that we'd put ourselves in the place of deep-sea fishes. How would they account for the fall of animal matter from above? They wouldn't try. Or it's easy enough to think of most of us as deep-sea fishes of a kind. Jour. Franklin Inst, 90-11. That, upon the 14th of February, 1870, there fell, at Genoa, Italy, according to Director Boccardo, of the Technical Institute of Genoa, and Professor Castellani, a yellow substance. But the microscope revealed numerous globules of cobalt blue, also corpuscles of a pearly color that resembled starch. See Nature, 2-166. Comptes Rendus, 56-972. M. Boas says of a substance, reddish varying to yellowish, that fell enormously and successively, or upon April 30, May 1 and May 2, in France and Spain, that it carbonized and spread the odor of charred animal matter, that it was not pollen, that in alcohol it left a residue of resinous matter. Hundreds of thousands of tons of this matter must have fallen. Odor of charred animal matter. Or an aerial battle that occurred in interplanetary space several hundred years ago, effect of time in making diverse remains uniform in appearance. It's all very absurd because, even though we are told of a prodigious quantity of animal matter that fell from the sky 3 days France and Spain, we're not ready yet, that's all. M. Boas says that the substance was not pollen, the vastness of the fall makes acceptable that it was not pollen, still, the resinous residue does suggest pollen of pine trees. We shall hear a great deal of a substance with a resinous residue that has fallen from the sky, finally we shall divorce it from all suggestion of pollen. Blackwood's Magazine, 3-338. A yellow powder that fell at Gerace, Calabria, March 14, 1813. Some of this substance was collected by Sig. Simonini, professor of chemistry, at Naples. It had an earthy, insipid taste, and is described as unctuous. When heated, this matter turned brown, then black, then red. According to the Annals of Philosophy, 11-466, one of the components was a greenish-yellow substance, which, when dried, was found to be resinous. But concomitants of this fall. Loud noises were heard in the sky. Stones fell from the sky. According to Gladney, these concomitants occurred, and to me they seem rather brutal, or not associable with something so soft and gentle as a fall of pollen. Black rains and black snows, rains as black as a deluge of inkjet black snowflakes. Such a rain as that which fell in Ireland, May 14, 1849, described in the Annals of Scientific Discovery, 1850, and the Annual Register, 1849. It fell upon a district of 400 square miles, and was the color of ink, and of a fetid odor and very disagreeable taste. The rain at Castle Common, Ireland, April 30, 1887. Thick, black rain. America Met 4, 4-193. A black rain fell in Ireland, October 8 and 9, 1907. Simons Met. Mag 43-2. It left a most peculiar and disagreeable smell in the air. The orthodox explanation of this rain occurs in Nature, March 2, 1908. Cloud of soot that had come from South Wales, crossing the Irish Channel and all of Ireland. So the black rain of Ireland, of March, 1898, ascribed in Simons Met. Mag 33-40, to clouds of soot from the manufacturing towns of North England and South Scotland. Our intermediatist principle of pseudo-logic, or our principle of continuity is, of course, that nothing is unique, or individual, that all phenomena merge away into all other phenomena, that, for instance, suppose there should be vast celestial superoceanic, or interplanetary vessels that come near this earth and discharge volumes of smoke at times. We're only supposing such a thing as that now, because, conventionally, we are beginning modestly and tentatively. But if it were so, there would necessarily be some phenomenon upon this earth, with which that phenomenon would merge. Extramundane smoke and smoke from cities merge, or both would manifest in black precipitations in rain.